That's it.
You're on.
Go, Dave. You've got the intro today.
No, I don't. You always do the intro.
I love getting
don't,
you like this.
Don't dump it on me. I'm all good.
All right. So, welcome to
great the intro.
Shut up. You caught me off guard, Dave. Don't press record when I haven't told you to hit record. Welcome to the French edition of the F1 Shakedown podcast. All I can say is let's hope that this podcast is a little bit more exciting than what we saw yesterday. Now,
Vivi,
before we get started, can you apologize to our listeners? Last week we had a bit of echo, but today we might get a little bit of hacksaw for the pure fact that there's tradies out the window that we're working on right now.
What's a tradie, right?
Is that serious, Dave? The underpants, mate. What do you think I'm talking about?
No, well, you know, people around the world, they might not refer to people who work out and do...
This podcast is definitely off in the same fashion as the French Grand Prix. Just put the music on so we can come back and get started. Done?
Yeah.
We settled in?
Hang on.
Can you hear the saw?
I love the saw. Go on.
All right. So, look, we do have people working outside our window. It doesn't matter where we sit. These people are going to be here. But even though the race was really boring, Dave, and please don't slurp when you've got the microphone on.
Well, I've got a coffee here. I've got to drink it.
All right.
I stayed up late to watch his race.
Okay. And how'd it go for you?
I pushed through. I did not fall asleep. Well, I even stayed up and watched the post-race interviews and all that, and was it worth it?
I don't think it was.
Absolutely not.
Am I
paying for it now?
Yes,
I'm very
you are.
Tired. But
I'm really disappointed. Yep. I sat down in front of... So just so everyone knows, what I do is when I'm watching the race, I have my little notebook on my phone, right? Because I'm modern like that.
Yeah.
And I take notes with things that I think I want to talk about, and that starts on a Thursday... and a Friday, and I watched the news and all that sort of stuff. Leading up to the French Grand Prix, I thought there may be something sort of building. Yeah, qualifying was very good. Even though Mercedes looked like they were dominating from the start, there were some good things that I saw happen. For example, McLaren. I'm so happy. How did they qualify? Fifth and sixth.
Fantastic.
So good.
Yes.
There was a few things that happened in qualifying. I said, geez, you know what? Just maybe, even though Mercedes looked dominant, just maybe Ferrari might be able to execute a few things strategy-wise here.
Yeah.
Well, I could not have been
further
more
wrong. Yeah.
So I sat there with my notebook
and
I started taking notes. And by about lap 10, I realized...
In the race. Yeah.
Thank you. I've got nothing to...
Write about. I had the same issue.
So what I wanted to talk about with you today was, let's cover off the main topics, and let's be honest, the only thing we can really talk about is obviously...
not stuff that hasn't happened on the track.
Yeah, off-track stuff.
Yeah.
Daniel Ricciardo's penalty that was post-race.
And you know that just when we have to talk about that kind of stuff, we know that there's a fundamental problem with the racing itself.
And I think that's what we're going
to
talk
when
about
when you actually
today,
have
Dave.
To talk about...
I think that's what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, and I want to cover that.
So are you... We will get to the results and things like that in a sec. But overall, are you feeling a little bit... we love Formula One. That's why we do a podcast, right?
Yeah.
Because we love Formula One. But our love is built on things that was that we grew up watching. Are you a little bit disenchanted now with the sport?
I am... Well, I look at every race slightly differently to you. That's why... I'm probably more engaged than a lot of other people who watch
Agreed.
It from, because I came into the race. I sent out the early predictor report on Thursday through Stat Freaks, and I always track my predictions and the percentages and the strike rates. And coming into the race, Hamilton statistically was on 71% from winning his races this year, which is very high. And I was keen to see...
Meaning he had a 71% chance
He's 71. He's won... Prior to coming into this weekend, he had won 71% of the races
right,
this year.
Yeah, okay.
Right, which is like 7 or six out of whatever it is, eight races.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is I wanted to see how well he could then push through, because this was a weekend where, you know, he since Spain, he's switched himself on.
Can you hear that saw?
That's all right. He's turned himself on. He's, it's annoying, isn't it?
No, it's fine for me. I'll just knock on the window. Oi!
What are they going to do?
Keep it down. You were just packing up 20 minutes ago.
They're like four times the size of those blokes.
Just, no one knows that, Dave. No one knows my stuff.
There's this little bloke sitting up there in the top of that apartment. Let's go up and get him.
Now, anyway,
I was saying, so I watch it from a statistical point of view. So when I'm writing down my notes, I'm like, all right, you know, Hamilton's, I knew he was going to dominate from as soon as he got pole. Because it's a type of track that, you know, 60% of the time you jump on, you win from pole. He got on there. As long as he went through the first few corners clean and there was no issues, nothing with Bottas, which they're going to be very cautious. He got through clean and there you go. Bang, he won by 11 seconds and he was harnessing
And did you think, issues. So you thought he was going to win after he got pole, but did you, did you think he was going to get
yeah,
pole?
Yeah, I watched his lap.
You didn't think at all at any stage there was a threat from Leclerc or...
No. I looked at, the way he sets up his car and he's just... The way he was flying through... He was going through practice sessions. He was pushing it to the limit. He was running off, going on. He was finding all the limits. And I was watching his lines. He takes a slightly different line than a lot of the other drivers. He avoids the bump.
He's in a nice little spot at the moment, isn't he?
Yeah, he's all...
He's in a groove.
His hair's all good. He's all glowing. He's like... His mind's all there.
I think he's beat... I know, guys, and I know that... I don't want to sound like forever the pessimist, but I think it's fair to say that not only has he crushed Ferrari, but the Bottas challenge is...
Yeah, Bottas, he's going to have to come back.
He's going to have to come back now. I'm not saying it's not bad.
Needs a firmware upgrade for next year. But anyway, I was just disappointed with the racing itself, but I was very interested that, you know, they're just, as I said, it's very predictable. And the statistics held up. For those of you into like sports betting and stuff like that, it's great because it's predictable.
Mm.
But if you're into entertainment, it's pretty boring.
I think, and I'm not going to apologise anymore for being...
No, you can't apologise for being the sport. Negative. Yeah. Don't apologise for the sport.
No, but I just want people to... I don't do a podcast to hang it on Formula One. But last night cemented a few things for me. The French Grand Prix used to be held... in Magny-Cours.
I love that circuit.
Okay. A traditional circuit, a circuit that was on the calendar.
And when you run off into the grass.
Yeah, it's a thoroughbred racing circuit. It's up there with Monza, Blues. Suzuka, Hungaroring, Spa.
Mm-hmm.
What else are these traditional racetracks?
I don't know. Well, Silverstone. I'd say bring back Imola.
Monaco. Exactly that.
Yeah.
Imola, all that sort of stuff.
You run off into the wall.
As always, and for reasons that obviously I'll never know the exact reasons why, but it was taken off the calendar.
It was.
Oh, what is it? Is it boring? Was it a funding thing? I don't know what it was. But Magny-Cours was thoroughbred race or a racing track.
Where was Magny-Cours located? Is that in the south of France?
I'm going to have to look it up.
Because one thing I noticed, I'm looking at... this circuit, Paul Ricard, the background, where it is, it's actually in a
aesthetically
really,
it's beautiful.
Which it's is in a exactly really nice part of France, and private jets land next to the course, right?
So it's a convenience thing.
So
right?
I was thinking to myself, maybe it's just a lot of people with a lot of influence who have a lot of money in their fund decided, hey, all our holiday houses are in the south of France. We can land our jets here and just walk to the track. Let's just race there.
Well,
but they actually haven't thought about the fans and the quality of racing that would occur.
So, Magny-Cours. To answer your question, right?
Yeah.
Is a race, and I'm reading this verbatim, guys, is located in central France, obviously near the town of Magny-Cours, and it's about 250 km from Paris.
Yeah, that sounds good.
And just FYI, just while we're saying that, Michael Schumacher holds a record in his F2004 with a 1:15.3.
It's a good track. That's a racer's job. Like,
it's a racetrack. So it's got a very short straight that heads into a series of like a slalom left and right. Yeah. It's got the Adelaide hairpin.
Reality is, though, if they brought these type of cars up,
exactly,
but this
is my point.
Magny-Cours would be a disaster.
But this is my point, right? It's got the Adelaide hairpin where it was literally Mika Hakkinen worked his way up in the wet from dead last to he won the race. No DRS, nothing artificial. He lined people up into the Adelaide hairpin and he got them on the exit.
He didn't have 2 meter wind.
Absolutely fantastic to watch. And that racing was fantastic. There's some seriously good races that you can watch online from Magny-Cours, right?
But isn't that sad that we have to go back?
But this is the
point. To watch good racing, we can't watch good racing now.
But that is 100%.
I can't remember a good. You know what the most exciting part of that race was? It got to the point where Lando Norris's car at the end of the race was having hydraulic issues, and then there was a little bit of 2-minute kerfuffle between Raikkonen and Ricciardo. But that has to come because the car in front's got issues and causes everyone to back up. You can't get near a car and overtake properly. You can't. It's horrible. The only thing they can really do, and this is what I thought about, if they left the cars they were now, then Pirelli has to make a drastic range of tyres where literally, if you're on the hard tyre and you're on the medium, we're talking like there's a massive difference and you have to use all three tyres in a race.
Yeah, but see what you're doing right now.
Manipulating.
This is what the FIA has done over the last 15 years. They haven't fixed the problem. They're trying to patch the problem.
Patch it. Yeah,
so like imagine a boat has like
10 holes.
10, 20 holes.
Plug one hole.
And Jean Todt's sticking his finger in one hole.
Jean Todt.
Yeah, and there's water coming in on the other side.
And then Fernando comes and puts all his
fingers. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they got rid of Magny-Cours and France was taken off the calendar, right? Then they obviously great Renault's back with a big team. So obviously what they do for fans is they bring back the French Grand Prix. And not only do they bring back the French Grand Prix, but they bring back Paul Ricard, which it looks like aesthetically is a nice circuit, but you got to understand it's a test track.
No, hang on a sec. When you say aesthetically is a nice circuit, when I look at that track on TV, it's horrible. And even
you don't like it?
No. And then Martin Brundle was out there. He can't even look at the racetrack when he's out doing the track walk or during the testing, because all those blue and red things
lines
screw up your eye vision because it like has a mirage warp.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Now, those things are there because it's a test
track. I don't like the circuit at all.
But you know why those things are there? Because it's a test track, right? So if you run off, you're not going to smash into a wall and break your cake.
Yeah, and they're designed to slow you down.
Slow you down. That's all good and well, but then you get situations like if we were on a proper racetrack where there was none of that blue stuff and the red stuff, Ricciardo wouldn't have pushed and tried to go off and get his penalty, which we'll speak about. People overtaking, running off the grid and off the track and rejoining, unfair overtaking. It's
last night was
on Suzuka, in Suzuka, mate. You go off the track, mate. Bye bye. There was one retirement on the weekend.
Yeah, but so this and is that was thing.
They just called Grosjean in and they're like, we need to retire the car.
Yeah, it's just so funny. It's just so funny that it was Grosjean, which we'll also talk about. But what this is the thing, right? So they get rid of Magny-Cours. They get into.
I don't know what you just drawn on your bit of paper. Doesn't.
I'm drawing. No. I'm drawing. I'm drawing like I was actually drawing a.
Oh, we got an end circuit. The bloke's cut his finger off with the saw.
But at least he'll stop him from using the saw. It's a whole series of things. It's a series of errors that have led up to this point. These cars now, at a really high level, these cars now are disgusting to look at.
Horrible.
Not only are they disgusting to look at, they've got this dirty halo, which great safety, all that stuff. I'm not talking about what it does. I'm talking about aesthetics, right?
Even they're too big. Even the halo, even if it's there, the halo, it has no impact on the racing, so I don't mind it. Right? Yeah. I don't care.
But why can't they do what IndyCar does, and they're bringing in like an F-18...
fighter pilot
thing.
But think about this, right? Let's say you left a halo. You take off the halo, you put it on. Does it impact the
racing? No, it doesn't.
What do they need to do? Tell me what you think they need to do to make the racing better on.
Okay, so they need to go back to these effectively a go-kart with an engine cover on it. That's what they need to do.
So right now they've got these cars that
look like they're a double-decker bus. They've got these aero bits all over it. They're trying to make the passing better, so they're making the wings bigger, but in fact they're actually getting more complex. They sound terrible. We know that. We don't have to revisit that because literally the whole
sound doesn't impact the actual racing.
No, but we're talking about Formula One now.
Yeah.
As the problem that it's got.
So if we make a list, let's just go quickly make a list, right? We've got
F1 first and foremost. I don't care what anyone says. Needs to blow your ears off because that's half the excitement of the sport.
Well, if I put him into categories, right? I've got sound and what's it called? Halo.
No, right. sound and car design.
Well, sound and halo, they're more cosmetics.
Yeah.
As in, that won't impact the racing. They're for the show. Right?
That's right.
Now, the halo's there for safety. Now, if I put them in category A,
yeah,
Cat A, they're there for the spectacle, right? You know, the halo's there to protect the driver. The sound there's, because when you physically go to the track or you're on onboard, sounds awesome. But then we've got this fundamental problem. And for those who may be just tuning into our podcast or starting to learn about F1, Ron's going to quickly explain this. The two most critical, well, there's three aero components on a car that are critical, right?
Yes.
Front wing, rear wing,
and a diffuser.
And the diffuser. Now,
well, and a floor. Well, well a floor. Effectively, well, the diffuser is the floor. Right?
Now, let's just start on the front ring, Ron, and I'm going to ask you a question.
I'm drawing these as you speak, like I'm some smart guy.
All right?
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you this question. So, I was watching the Sky audio and the Sky video before the... on Thursday with the practice, and they went into this thing, oh, Ferrari's got a new front wing and they've solved their problems because what was happening in the factory is not happening out on the track.
Yep.
And then they showed the front wing and they compared it to the front wing they brought to France versus the one they had in Canada, and I was expecting like something really cool. And
was it literally like
they cut out a centimeter little square on an end plate and put a little line that's ingrooved up by 1 centimeter so the air would flow.
Oh, nice.
And they had this thing on it for half an hour and I'm like, Jesus Christ.
And did it work?
No, of course it didn't work. But this is my point. Why the team is spending so much money and time on these wings. So let's start on the front wing.
Yeah.
Ferrari's front wing and McLaren's front wing and Mercedes front wing. And I'm thinking, I'm looking at these front wings. They got all these slots and all that kind of stuff. And this is horrible. Like, I don't want to watch a show.
They're actually... not that nice to look at anymore either.
I don't want to watch a show about a little slot of a 1 centimeter gap in a front wing. But unfortunately, the guys at Sky TV, they do a great, great show. They've got nothing else to cover. All right? And so because these front wings are designed the way they are at the moment, the car, you can't, as soon as you go behind another car with your front wing, it loses all the aero. Yes. And the car can't turn properly. And then we go to the rear wing.
There's right? a dirty air problem. And then, in Formula 1 at the moment.
Dirty,
and that's got a lot to do with the overall aerodynamics of the car, but in particular the front wing, right?
And if I trace this all back, like I was thinking to myself, these are my notes that I was going through mentally on Thursday, Friday.
Mm.
I just drew, in my mind, I drew a timeline. When did this all start? You know when it started in my mind? I'm going to go back to the Braun days.
When the diffuser had to be counted.
Ross Braun found a loophole and they created the rear diffuser, which is technically... allowing the air to flow under the car and then up through the rear and over the rear wing, right, to create even more rear downforce.
Mm-hmm.
And since that day, aerodynamics has become so dominant in an F1 car to the point where they've overdeveloped it.
It's overdeveloped.
And you can't race, you can't follow.
And they can't do anything to change it because teams don't want to let go on their little strongholds, right?
Yes.
So a front wing, do you know how much it costs to...
I reckon at least $250,000.
Well, you're looking at 300,000 euro for a front wing design.
That's $250,000 almost, yeah.
On a Formula One car, right?
Mm. That's your design, then you've got to manufacture it.
So if they want to change the front... Now, they changed the front wing rules
last year. Yeah.
And 2019, and we've got these new front wing designs that are going to give like 15% more overtaking capability or whatever it was. Those front wings have done nothing.
No, they're done the opposite.
And all we saw yesterday. So those front wings is where the problem starts, right? Yeah. They're overdeveloped and it causes cars cannot follow the car behind because of the turbulent air that comes off the back of one car and hits the front wing of another.
100% correct.
Right?
So this is the question, right? So you either do band-aid solutions, which is what they're trying to do, and say, do they go to the rear wing for next upcoming season and restrict that so it doesn't impact, creates less dirty air?
At the back.
Or... do they actually just say smaller front wings, smaller rear wings?
It has to be what you just said.
Smaller?
Smaller. And go back to what they were. Literally, one F1 wings
were just
used to be...
No little winglets and...
A metre wide.
Yeah.
Or even 800.
Yes.
Wide. With one gurney flap.
That's it. One gurney flap.
That's it. It was a gurney flap.
Yeah.
Up and down.
That's it.
And you could change the angles on it.
Yes.
Right? Now, they've got like 12...
Gurney flaps,
and it's out of control, right? So the biggest issue is you've got, so do I sometimes, right? The biggest issue you got is the front wing, right? Yesterday, you could see the cars that were just struggling to pass, and even when they got in the turbulent air going around the hairpin or whatever, they would get oversteered,
you can't actually come into a corner and follow another car through a corner.
Correct.
You lose so much grip
Correct.
It's okay for you. Like in go-karting and some of the lower grades, you can actually follow closely. For those who are in Australia and you follow V8 racing and then everyone that follows NASCARs.
That's exciting stuff to watch.
You can sit there and you can see them follow each other through the corners.
Yep.
And get into the air and you know, it shouldn't be about the aerodynamics. It should be about the driver and his capability to bring the car through the corner at speed.
That's it. And this is why they're having a lot of trouble regulating it. So that was a front wing. Now, the rear wing is very interesting to me. Do you know the cost of a rear wing? And a DRS overtaking
I'd probably system. Say that'd be $500,000. That'd be a lot.
Actually, no. What? No, less? It's actually a lot less. It's probably looking at about €150,000 for that.
Just the rear wing?
Just the rear wing.
Yeah, but not the diffuser.
No, not the diffuser. No. The floor is one of the most expensive parts, right?
Mm.
The rear wing, if you actually have a look over the years, I've never seen a part of a car be changed that much out of desperation by the FIA to try and make things better. They went from low wide wings back in the early 2000s.
Yes.
Right? Off the back coming out of the 90s where they were sort of just these single end plate designs.
Why did they change it back then?
Because the quest for downforce, the quest to get around a corner quicker, right? Then they realized that they were creating issues for the cars behind. So they said, let's make them really skinny, but really high. They look disgusting.
Yeah, I remember that.
Right? And that was coinciding with like those gonzo noses that they had on the front of the cars. Then they said, oh, look.
What's gonzo? Isn't that from
Sesame Street? Right? Then they went from that really tall and thin design.
Yeah. And now where are they at?
To a... A shorter, flat design.
Now aren't they just super wide?
Now they've gone for this super wide with a 45 degree angle thing going on.
Yeah.
And it hasn't changed a thing. The cars have gotten worse. Yeah. They've gotten faster.
Yeah.
Impressive. Great. Wow. That's what we love about Formula One. But the race
Seriously, I wouldn't care if they went 3 seconds slower.
Oh, I couldn't care less. Make the race. I want them to lose 5 seconds, 10 seconds. I don't care. But you know one thing that had bothered me yesterday? And this is what I wanted to talk about while we get to the rear wing. DRS. Absolute sport killer. Does that help with passing? Yes.
Drag reduction system.
Drag reduction system. What can you tell us about the drag reduction system?
I don't think it...
Really simple.
It's a band-aid. What is it? It's a band-aid
fix. Yeah, but for those people that I'm sure they know what it is.
Well, there's 2 points on every track. Okay. Right? So you get just before a straight... They'll have a line, and if you're within 1 second of the car in front of you, you get access to press this little button on your wheel. And on your rear wing, a little flap opens up to allow more air to flow through, and you can get more straight line speed. Then as soon as you hit the brake, the flap closes, and you've got your full...
Okay, so in short, it helps by pressing a button on your steering wheel.
It opens a rear wing.
It opens a rear wing and helps you to pass another car.
And give you more straight line speed.
Now... Really cool concept.
Yeah.
My gripe with it is, why would you have to introduce, even though this is a couple of years old, why would you have to introduce a trick system to allow you to pass the car in front of you?
I can answer that.
Why would the FIA go down that path rather than try and fix the issue right then and there with the aerodynamics?
So, as I was saying, my point before, I scroll back to the Ross Brawn days, and as soon as... That rear diffuser was introduced.
It was called the blown diffuser.
Double rear diffuser.
Yeah. Oh, there was a double rear diffuser. The Red Bull did the blown diffuser. Yeah. Yes, smart. Yeah. Good.
As soon as there was a double, then it was very quickly identified that there's too much dirty air coming off the rear wing. And as soon as you go behind the car, you can't get any momentum. So they introduced the DRS to counter for that.
Okay. And that's after they had things like the F-duct.
Yeah, what was the F-duct again?
So the F-duct... Here we go, right?
Remember the F-duct?
So did you forget it? So F-duct was the system where the drivers could activate by covering a hole in the car pressing a button.
I remember Ferrari used to put
that would allow the car to suck air through the front nose.
The F-duct.
Right?
Yeah.
And then actually trace that air through the bottom of the floor and actually create a direct flow of air and create downforce in the car, right? But see, they've got all these systems that are getting more and more complicated to assist the fact that there's no passing. And what has is no passing. So what happened? This DRS system yesterday, the only passing we saw yesterday, it was too obvious. The DRS, the zone was too long.
I've got a theory. All right. Feel free to challenge me on this.
No, go. Go.
You got two groups of people in a room. Yep. 30 people each.
Yep.
One group of people are all technical aero engineers and experts.
Yep.
The other ones are all managers, businessmen, and entertainment.
Yep.
Then you go to group one, which are all the technical people,
mm-hmm.
and you ask them, hey, we've got a problem, all right? You can't overtake in F1. What do you want to do? I'm pretty confident all technical people are going to come back and say, we need maybe we should create an F duct. Maybe we should create.
Are you talking about the Allisons and the...
We should create an F duct. We should create double DRS, KERS. Let's build all these extra things to make it more exciting.
Because they're doing their job, right?
Then when you go back to the simple, pure businessmen or actual people, I should maybe say a group of racers,
mm-hmm.
people who just race.
Yep.
They're going to, like, if you put a group
like
of drivers...
Jackie Stewart's, your Johnny Herbert's, your Damon Hill's...
Martin Brundle's, a group of racers, and you say, we need to make racing better. We've got this problem where you can't follow other cars because of the rear diffuser and the rear wing. What do we do? They're going to say, remove it.
Yeah.
Take it away, make it simple, and give us fatter tyres for racing. It just seems like the sport has been turned into now it's run by engineers. That's
or people or, that actually, even people, men, that haven't actually raced, done anything motor racing.
Correct.
Before.
They're all, every single component along the timeline since Ross Brawn's generation has come in, and it's all every band-aid fix they've put in, floors, winglets, this, that. It's all from a technical perspective. Why not just take it all away?
Because then Jeantot believes that it takes away from the innovation of motor racing.
No one's going to watch a sport. They're going to run out of money.
Well, you know that they're going to 18-inch rims next year, yeah? Do you know that?
Why?
Low-profile 18-inch rims.
Why?
Something to do with aero flow.
Aero. So everything's around aero. I don't know. This is another
fact. Did you not know that?
Well, I don't look at all the technical stuff anymore because it was that... I got to a point...
Jeez, Dave's genuinely disappointed here, guys. I'm looking at his face.
Think about it. I used to follow it heavily when it was the rear diffuser, but then when it came to the point that everything, all the solutions they were putting in were technical, instead of actually saying, you know what, the rear wings, the way it's ruined racing, let's revert it and bring back the racing.
So yesterday, for example, towards the end, when Lando Norris had a hydraulic, it seemed that he had a hydraulic... a slow failure, let's just say. His hydraulics was dying a slow death.
Yes.
With about 10, 15 laps to go.
Yeah.
And it started with the fact that he couldn't open up the drag reduction or the DRS.
Well, they didn't want him to in case it made it worse.
Made it worse, right? Therefore, he couldn't attack the car in front.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? So what happened then? Obviously,
he had to the
hydraulics issue sort of crept forward throughout the car, the diff and all that sort of stuff, and he had to hold the position.
Yeah.
I already know, and I'm sure you did too, and a lot of the big F1 fans out there, that he was done for.
Yeah, sitting duck.
He was a sitting duck because the cars behind him had access to DRS, Daniel Ricciardo, for example, and the straights are way too long. The DRS zones at Paul Ricciardo are way too long, which means that passing went from being assisted... It was a gimme, right? And on the last lap, he got passed by three cars. Now, yes, there was a little bit of Daniel Ricciardo ran wide, came back onto the track, which he was penalised for. But do you see what I mean? Like, Lando Norris was robbed on the last lap. Granted, there was a hydraulic issue with his car, but that DRS, it just made it so obvious. We knew... that you're actually at a disadvantage to be leading, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah. It's
so if I'm sitting, but if you and I were racing, and there's two laps to go, yeah, and I knew
that I wasn't going to break away. A disadvantage,
but I wasn't going to break away from you and create a second gap.
I look at it like this: if Lando Norris's car didn't have any issues, even with Ricciardo with the DRS, wouldn't have got past him. He only got past him because the car had issues. So the DRS to me is a wank feature. It's crap. That's what it is. I love it. It's a gimmick.
It is.
It's like you get in the zone, you get DRS. And it's like, well.
But let me ask you this. Yeah. You've raced go-karts, right? And you do it well. If you were racing.
Yeah.
And the go-karts had DRS, let's say you and I are racing together. There's two laps to go.
Yeah. Go-karts are different.
Is okay. You know, let's just pretend all things being equal, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's almost, I'm almost, and this I'm leading. It's almost worth me letting you past. Yeah?
No, but you're forgetting one thing. When you follow another car for a long time, you wreck your tyres.
Correct.
So you actually destroy your car. So this is the other thing. The aero doesn't allow you to follow another car without overheating and wrecking your tyres. So it is an advantage of being front, because you can less stress on your car, look after your tyres better. As I said, the problem with Lando was that his car let him down. Right? Fantastic race. Great drive. Drive of the day. But his car let him down. And what happened was the DRS just amplified it.
It was too easy yesterday.
Even without the DRS, Ricciardo would have got around him because his car was shutting down on the last lap. It was literally
cool. Yeah, it was.
And the only reason why he got overtaken by three cars is because it got really aggressive and, you know, Lando had to get off the gas and this, and the other cars gained a second or two. And it was just a mess. But that's just the reality. Still, you make a good point. Is a DRS needed?
At the moment, yes, to counter the fact that they can't pass.
Correct, and that goes back to this. Why was it introduced?
Because the aero game has gotten out of control.
Correct. So what I'm saying is, if they just go back and simplify the aerodynamics, leave everything else. Leave the DRS, leave the curves, leave the battery systems, leave all that. Leave it. Take away the aero, simplify it, and make the tyres fatter, make it more mechanical.
But then people say, oh, but the V6 hybrid engines are too powerful, they need more aerodynamics to keep them.
Make it more mechanical. Give them fatter tyres, more grip.
The tyres are becoming skinnier, you know that, right? With the 18-inch profile.
Of course it is. So everything that they're doing, whoever's in it does, is doing the opposite.
Yeah, they're going around in a circle.
So it's like, what can we do to make racing less exciting?
Well,
and more safer?
So that was the race, right?
Yeah.
There wasn't the highest of attendances at Paul Ricciardo over the...
I was sitting there with the wife, and we're watching this thing at 12:30 in the morning, AM, and where's all the people? There's no one in the crowd. There's a grandstand. They showed one grandstand with, like, yellow, because it's Renault, and a couple of French flags. It was great. Like, you can see one grandstand, but me and you know, when we go to Albert Park here, first race of the season, probably gets one of the most highest attendances.
It does, absolutely.
Because it's the first
race. People are excited. They want to see things. They love the sport.
Because it's exciting and it's the first race of the season, there's so many unknowns, right? That's what's great about Albert Park. But then after a few races, you get to, like, France, and you're like, we know who's going to win. The track sucks. We get there, there's one grandstand full of people, and then that's it. It's in a part of France where it's, you know, it's very expensive to travel to that part. You know, it's not...
South of France.
Yeah.
I don't know, Dave. You know, like I said, and I say this to everyone again, the reason why we're talking so passionately about this is because we're not dumping on the sport out of a place of hate. We love it so much.
We're upset.
And it's not sustainable. Formula One isn't sustainable at the moment. I literally was on Twitter yesterday, and I was actually...
Yeah, tell me about this, because you said to me... Twitter has been... There's been a lot of feedback on Twitter lately about...
The French Grand Prix yesterday got absolutely destroyed on Twitter. There were people literally tweeting in saying, I'm watching IndyCar right now, and it is 10 times better. The racing, drivers are bumping each other. Not that we want to promote bumping, but they're bumping each other. They're using little bits of runoff. The stewards are staying out of it. People literally didn't know who was going to win. Right, and I'm reading some of these tweets, and people were literally saying, you know, I've turned off, or you know, putting these funny, you know, gifs of like people falling asleep or whatever. What I actually will do right now is I won't mention any names, but I am going to just go to the hashtag of the French GP. Right,
why are you doing that? Can I ask you a question?
You certainly can.
Explain to me what. Who's the guy in charge of Liberty? Chase,
Carey. And there's rumours that he's on the way out, by the way.
Okay, so explain to me what his role is, and our viewers or audience.
Carey is looking after now the direction of the sport from a commercial perspective.
From a commercial perspective, right? Now,
it's not going very well, let's just say.
Commercially, like I watch it, the entertainment's slightly a bit better than it's been in the past. There's more access to...
But you're talking about access, right? Yeah,
there's a lot more access to F1 footage and media and information than there has been in the past. So I'm going to put a tick in that box. Now, who's in charge of the direction of F1 from a technical perspective which we've been discussing for the past half an hour.
Can you ask me that question again? Sorry.
So Chase Carey's in charge of it from a commercial perspective.
Yeah.
Who's in charge of it from a technical?
No, the racing from the technical side, rules and regulations, what the cars look like, sound like, what they do. That comes from the FIA.
And who's in charge of the FIA?
Well, that's Jean Todt, is the president, which really blows my mind because he's from an era. Now, the people older than us will say that the best era was obviously the Piquet days, the Rosberg days, the Prost and Senna days, which I would agree with. But Jean Todt was from that time, but he was also from the time where we had that early 2000s, late 90s, where you had the Ferrari v Benetton v McLaren days, where the sport commercially was unmatched. It was the pinnacle of motor racing, four wheels or two.
How long has Jean Todt been in charge?
I'd have to check, but let's just say it's been a while, Dave.
10 years?
Yeah, maybe just under.
I'm trying. I'm a pattern recognition.
I'm having a look.
I recognise patterns. I study patterns, so I'm just putting together pieces. Jean Todt.
2009. 10 years exactly.
Okay. What was the racing like in 2008, 2009? I can tell you now, Kimi Raikkonen, World One Champ. One of the best seasons I've ever seen.
So that was...
2008.
Yeah, so those years leading up. Let's say 2007, 2008, 2009.
Now, what happened in those years? Hamilton won it by a point. Raikkonen won it by... It was the closest racing.
Yeah, and guess what? They were all under the previous Concorde Agreement.
Correct. Now, what happened was... 2009.
And the Concorde Agreement, sorry, just in case people listen for the first time, is a set of rules and regulations that they set out for the next 10 years.
Rowan loves the Concorde Agreement.
Bloody oath, I do.
When he says the word Concorde, I just...
Because let me tell you, if the next Concorde Agreement comes out...
Everything's tying back to the French people.
Because, exactly.
Concorde means like the aeroplane, that was a Concorde Agreement in France. Everything's done. We go back, and then what do we find in 2009? Jean Todt came in from France.
Yeah. I love this. This is like an episode of Scooby-Doo here, and I would have got away with it if it wasn't for you kids.
That's right, Raggy. Now, Jean Todt's come in 2009, yeah?
Yeah.
How bad has the racing been?
It's deteriorated year on year.
From 2010 onwards?
It deteriorated year on year.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, do you think it's because Jean Todt, I think he's such a nice personality that...
What?
No. He's really nice, he is. I think a lot of... He may have been... I think a lot of the people who have a strong technical opinion in the sport, Adrian Newey, back then, and then what's the guy's name? Christian Horner.
Yeah,
you call
like Jock Clear and all those original guys, yeah.
Have got somehow influenced the FIA to go down a path of destruction.
No, I will stop you there.
What is it?
These guys have no say.
Who has the say?
The technical people. The problem is that, and this is a big issue that all the teams...
Well, no, hang on, because...
The problem is that the FIA have all of the say.
Yeah, but they've got all of the say, but I heard on the weekend, like, all the technical directors of every team...
Are having their opinions.
They're going to have a meeting, they have a coffee.
That comes down to...
Yeah.
My favourite word, the Concorde Agreement, which is why it's breaking down.
Can you say that one more time?
Because I tell you what,
is going out the window.
The FIA come in and say... And you see the Senna movie.
Go on.
The best decision is my decision. Remember he said that?
Yeah.
Okay. Jean-Marie Balestri.
Yeah. But he's not there anymore, is he?
No. But Jean Todt is.
Yeah.
Same.
You keep mentioning the name, I keep writing down.
Right. So, right, and don't get me wrong, there's been people like Max Mosley, in my opinion, was the ex-president of the FIA. I think he was outstanding.
So the racing's been bad, declining.
Since Max Mosley.
Since
Max Mosley
left.
Yes.
He left, right? Yeah.
He had the scandal with the sex tape.
We won't go into that.
No, we can. It's a reality, right?
Yes.
So, the FIA has all the say.
Yes.
Right?
But how are they influenced?
No, by a group of men that sit in a boardroom.
Yeah. But they're not...
And they have a look about environmental factors. Okay, moving forward, we need to look at, in an environmental conscious society, we need to look at how we can make the racing environmentally friendly.
Yeah, but they're not
sitting... Here comes the hybrid engine.
Yeah, but they're not sitting there going, we need to make the wing 2 meters wide
to
save the trees.
Yes, they do. Because they don't use people like Adrian Newey and all that. They have their internal people. And then what happens is they roll that out without anything. They roll it out. So what happens is when the Concorde Agreement comes along, that's when they go to Adrian Newey. That's when they go to Toto Wolff and all those people. And what happens is Toto Wolff says, well, I don't want to change that because it's going to disadvantage me. But then you've got Ferrari going, yeah, but if you don't change that, I'm going to leave. And then you've got Christian Horner saying, yeah, I don't like that rule. I want to be able to play with the engine mid-season, so I want to change that engine rule. And then Toto Wolff says, well, no, you can't do that because that's disadvantaging Mercedes. Hence why the Concorde Agreement has now been delayed till December.
Don't you think maybe they should just scrap the whole Concorde
Agreement? There's too many chiefs. Not enough Indians. That's the problem.
We mean that in a literal way. Not, yeah.
There's too many chiefs, mate.
Yeah, yeah. People don't understand what that means.
Well, no, it? People know. It's a famous saying. It's probably not the most politically correct saying. But there's too many people calling the shots, mate. Yeah.
So that I actually, when you're telling
too me... Too many chefs spoil the broth, Dave.
I think, and, you know, people drink broth. Like, you know, we've got a mate that drinks all the time. Good luck to me. But what I'm saying is the FIA, maybe they have to go back to the model where they don't factor in...
But it won't happen, Dave.
Feedback from external. And they have to say, I'm the FIA. It's our decision. But
they invited everybody on last Thursday after Barcelona. Yes. Or Monaco, sorry. They invited everybody. Come and have a meeting. Let's talk about it.
Don't you think it should be like this? Like, this is how I... This is my opinion. It should be, here are the... We're going to come up with the rules. The FIA come up with the rules for racing. For good racing. And then let's go, see you later, teams. Go work it out with all your expertise.
That's exactly what's happening now. But the problem is that the rules that are starting here
Are wrong.
Are completely wrong direction.
Yeah, but that, I've got a feeling those
which rules is why, have been influenced. Which is why Jean Todt brought in Ross Brawn.
Yeah, but
now Ross Brawn has sort of like taken on this...
He's a technical person.
Yeah, but he's taken on this FIA approach. So the sport's in trouble. Yeah. After all this, we can conclude that the sport's in trouble.
Yeah, we knew that. Yeah, it's horrible.
And I'm glad we had this podcast because it's like therapy for us.
Yeah, this is a let out the frustration.
It is. It's an outlet.
Why F1 sucks at the moment podcast.
Well,
that's what it is.
And you know what? And I look forward to next
reality week. Reality is, like, for Austria. We've been F1 fans our whole life and it's... F1 sucks right now.
But the younger generation...
How are they going to follow this sport?
Yeah, but some of them are like, oh no, it's great and they sound great and they look so good and... And that's fine because they're younger and they're entitled to that. But the thing is that I feel sorry for them in some way because they missed a really good generation of racing.
Yes, they're more entwined with how good's Hamilton's hair, all that kind of stuff. All that little stuff. Social media, blah, blah. But they're actually... Well, that's why I say to you, maybe the commercial side is actually improved, okay? Because, you know, Hamilton rides around his little purple scooter and that. It's pretty cool. You know how many scooters he's probably selling now?
Well, it's true. It's true.
That's all good and well. And we get an insight, but there's more footage about behind. We get, you know, Martin Brundle and the team, and I know I keep referring to Sky because that's what I watch, but they go behind the scenes and, you know, they walk up to drivers, they ask them questions, and they're in the paddock like they're part of it.
Yeah.
Right? We get all that access now. So from a commercial perspective, it's fantastic. But the actual sport and the core fundamental racing, it is probably one of the worst categories in the world at the moment for quality of racing.
Yeah.
The worst.
And I'm going through some of the... I'm just picking random ones. And forgive me if I use... Not bad language, but right. So, first one.
Yeah.
F1 is trying to overtake ASMR. Do you know what ASMR is? ASMR are videos that help people sleep and relax. F1 is trying to overtake ASMR for the most sleep-inducing, boring shit in the world. Probably a bit harsh, but
no, I understand not. Where you're coming from. You know, I struggled to stay awake last night.
Right? These are just random tweets. F1 versus IndyCar. F1, better drivers, faster cars. IndyCar, better racing. Right? I like that. Right? Let's have a look what else we've got here. True shit. F1 is boring. Watching paint dry is more entertaining. And that's from a person who's been watching F1 for the last 15 years.
Yeah, wow. Do you think that the FIA...
Lewis Hamilton, if I may. Sorry. Yeah. Don't point fingers at drivers. Question the rule makers. That's what Lewis Hamilton says.
Well, isn't that what we're doing now? And who are
the rule makers?
The FIA.
There you go.
Isn't that what we're doing now?
That's what we're doing.
We're questioning here.
That's what we're doing. So these are some of the things. These are some of the things that we've had to endure yesterday. So, anyway, that was the French GP in a nutshell. And it's a little bit concerning because I think the FIA...
Well, what were the finishing positions of the GP? We had Lewis Hamilton won the race by a comfortable 18 seconds. 18.
That's a concern too. Why did that concern you? When I saw you this afternoon, you said to me,
because he won, that was a real concern. He won by 18 seconds. He was nursing. He had a broken seat. And so he wasn't going as fast as he could because he had some issues.
Yep.
And he beat his teammate by 18 seconds, which is almost a full pit stop. He lapped everyone up to sixth spot.
Yep.
Right? Valtteri Bottas finished second, 18 seconds adrift. And then Charles Leclerc, 18 seconds adrift of, well, 19 seconds adrift of Bottas. Yeah, 18.9. So the top three were separated by almost, what is that, 60, close to 60 seconds.
Did you know everyone was lapped up until Carlos Sainz? Yeah. Who finished 95 seconds off the pace. Did you say that?
2 seconds.
Sorry, guys. I was listening today, but I was also bringing up some of the more detailed times.
It's all good.
I was listening to
you. Yeah, and then, you know, Verstappen, Vettel got the... I was happy with Ferrari. They actually thought about, you know, putting pressure on. They're like, we're going to go for the fastest lap. And they did it so smartly. They did it on the very last lap, so Verstappen couldn't pit as well.
Yep.
And challenge him.
Yep.
So
good on Ferrari for going after that extra point.
Fantastic. That's what we want to see that from Ferrari.
But it just annoys me that that's what they have to salvage, like this whole thing. Like, yeah. Oh, get a point for fastest lap. You know, I understand why Vettel said he's not... He's fallen out of love with the sport. No, he did not say that. It's not the sport that he fell in love with.
Yeah. Correct.
That's what he said.
And then further down the grid, we've got Vettel, Sainz, Raikkonen, Hülkenberg, Norris... Ricciardo got copped the penalty, finished 11th. Gasly, did he score a point? Did he? He did. He finished 10th. So
yeah, but that was on the back of
yes. Let's have a chat about Red Bull. So you've got Verstappen, who's finishing consistently in the top 5 to 4, and then you've got his teammate, who's almost finishing consistently 5 places down, in an identical car, in a team where you need to. Obviously, you know...
I think Pierre Gasly won't see the end of the season at Red Bull, because when you've got Helmut Marko running the show, and Red Bull is a team that is like high-performing demands, KPIs. I'm sure every Formula 1 team has them, obviously. But they've proven that they'll get rid of you if they need to. I would be very surprised...
Who would they put in the seat?
I never thought I would say it, but I reckon Fiat might get the call.
And this recording equipment's going out the window in a second. What do you mean? Toro Rosso?
Yeah.
Over Albon?
Mm.
Really?
Yeah, I think Albon might...
Well, I don't know. How long has Kvyat been in F1?
Well, he had
3 years?
He had a year off. This is his first year back.
What about
Albon? And he's a different person. What about Albon? This is his first year.
And who's outperforming who?
Kvyat's doing better. Albon's got more on the qualifying days, and Kvyat has a little bit better on the
I'd be tempted to. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if Kvyat's up to...
But who would you replace him with? People say that Nico Hülkenberg might go there.
Oh, well...
Something tells me that won't happen.
He's done 199 races and he hasn't had a win. And he's...
Do you think Gasly will be there at the end of the year?
Yeah, I think they'll keep him. They're not going to... He's not upsetting... He's not upsetting Verstappen. The car can't win at the moment.
I'm happy to go against what you're saying, as in a personal friendly bet. Yeah.
I
reckon he'll be gone before the end of the year.
Coming. Unfortunately, our good friend Robert, I think, may not see the season out.
Yeah, possibly.
And I've got a feeling that we may see someone in that Williams sooner rather than later.
If Gasly doesn't perform in Austria,
yeah,
I think that he'll come into a review.
Yeah, that's their home.
That's their home race, track, right?
You know, generally,
and considering that his teammate is constantly in that cemented fourth spot, right? That's a big thing.
So let's have a chat quickly about the upcoming race.
Before we do that, I'm really sorry. Can I just ask you a quick question about Roman Grosjean? I
apologize. It's all good.
Do you think Grosjean will be there next year at Haas? I've got a little inkling that he might not be.
Well, I've got I don't like him.
You don't like him?
No, because he whinges a lot.
He does, doesn't he?
Yeah,
but I think Steiner agrees with you.
I think his whinging has also impacted Magnussen, and he's turning into a whinger as well.
Too vocal.
He's just too. They're. I know they're frustrated. Yeah, like the car was an absolute disaster on the weekend. It was horrible. They started off fantastic at the start of the season, gone backwards.
Mm.
And it's like, well, hang on a second. Grosjean, we're used to him whinging. He's been...
Yeah, but he can... Like, he... Did you see what happened in practice?
When he...
He flat-spotted the tyre. And the car was vibrating that bad that you could actually hear it on the TV because the cars are quiet. You could actually hear the car vibrating on the television. He locked up. He got on the radio and said to his race engineer, "I'm staying out to see if I can scrub the flat spot out." And the engineer said, "All right, if you're happy to do it, do it." Two laps later, he gets back on the radio complaining that he goes, "There's no way a flat spot's causing this. There's an issue with the suspension or whatever." And the race engineer said, "No, you've destroyed the tire. And if you don't come in, you're actually going to cause issues with the chassis."
Hmm.
But he was very argumentative with, like, why is this happening?
And you know what's frustrating? He has these glimpses. Once a year, he'll do something so fantastic. It's like, man, what a great...
And you think that's why they keep him?
And they, it's like he does these one-off... He's like a star that shines once and then goes out.
He's done.
He's very inconsistent. I don't know. I think that team there is plenty of room for improvement. They're not hitting their marks. And I wouldn't be...
They've gone backwards this year.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if there is a change in drivers in that team as well. I don't think mid-season. I think it'll... Because they're contracted. That's the thing. A lot of these teams, the drivers are contracted. And... If you're a Haas team, you can't go pay your driver out of the contract and have enough money to bring in another driver. But if you're a Renault team, or a team with a slightly bigger budget, like it'd be very hard. Red Bull can do it easily, right? Because it's a performance team. They've got the money.
Mm-hmm.
They've got the budget. It's bang, you're out. They got a driver program. So that'll be, I don't know.
Before you, I know you want to talk about the next race.
Yeah, I do.
I don't want to be too biased, so I want to ask your opinion very quickly on...
but you are biased. You're a McLaren fan.
Yeah, but
I'm a Ferrari.
I've got to keep it neutral. How are you finding McLaren's progression?
I was rapt. When they... I think I texted you.
Right? You did.
I said, how good is that? Like, Rowan's going to disagree with me.
No.
But at the start of the season, if you review our podcast, I've always said, you know what? I like Zach Brown.
Yeah.
And I said, I've stuck by it since day one because I think what McLaren has needed all along is an individual who will bring all the workers and the team and the environment together in a happy, cheerful place.
You've always been big on family. Yeah,
because McLaren has come from the dark ages. We touched on this in previous episodes where Ron Dennis, it was the Death Star, it was a Darth Vader, Star Wars, Imperial March team. It was literally cold. And to top it off...
They also won a lot.
Yeah, it's like... Back then, it was like... McLaren was like literally... It was...
A driving force.
But no, but it was run like an army.
Yeah, right? No, it was.
They went out there and they said... Who can we bring in as a driver that will fit this mold? So they got Raikkonen because the bloke
he's
the Iceman, right? And it was perfect. But that I think that day and age is gone. And then with Ron Dennis leaving, and then Fernando Alonso coming, is very passionate. You know, the bull is excited. He's that didn't fit.
No.
And I think what McLaren has learned from that is yes, that personality didn't fit our team. But it also showed them that we need to change so we can bring in drivers and it's fun again. It's fun. We're all patting each other on the back, but we're making progression. And you can see from the start of the season, yes, Zach Brown, he's American. He comes from a different cop. But he was on the pit wall. He's hugging the guys. Yeah, and I was like, man, how good is that? And in any sport, Ron, we even go back to our local football team. As soon as you take away all the coldness and you bring in the positive vibes into a team, you're going to lift. And that's what's happening. You guys are lifting because you've got smiles, you're glowing. The drivers are happy. Lando Norris did this great piece with Anthony Davis.
Yeah, he did that. He's very well spoken.
Very well spoken, but he's glowing. He's excited. They're wrapped. They're like, you know, with
cold. But they don't know what they did. Do you think they knew what they did at that circuit or do you think it was tracked?
No, they know. They're very smart. You could tell. I could tell from Thursday.
Ricciardo said they brought an update of some sort.
I could tell on Thursday that the car was quick and I'm sitting there going, man, these guys are generally quick. We saw them quick in winter testing and then they lost it at the start of the season. But the reality is they were happy. There was smiling people on the pit board. This is on Friday. Yeah. On a Friday, they're laughing and joking around. They're interviewing Zach Brown. He's all happy. You know, the drivers are excited. They're comfortable. They're like, it's all the pressure's gone. It's like Zach's come in and said, stop worrying about all the pressure.
They're in a serious battle with Renault at the moment.
Stop worrying about the historics of McLaren and how much we were champions. Forget about all that. What do we need to do now? And they're looking at the things where they're not performing well and they're improving them.
Mm.
Right? Ferrari now is getting there. They've smashed themselves heavily over the past six races about how they should be at this standard. Now they've gone back to like, you know what? Let's just do some small things right. And as you're doing those small things right, you tick away. Because that's what it is. Out of all the little things, you'll get the achievement. Yeah. That's what's happening at McLaren. I'm very happy as a supporter of F1. And, man, I texted you, I say, man, Lando Norris is a gun. I really like him as a driver and as an individual.
He's coming. They're going a long way. They're going to go a long way. It's going to take a long time.
And the post-race interview with Carlos Sainz, man, it was fantastic. He was buzzing. They're so excited. They already want to get to the next race. Yeah. They're like, we're going to go to Woking. We're going to go to the Italian restaurant. We're going to have our dinner. But we want to get to. They want to get in the car and they want to, because they know they're moving. And this is the time now. I think.
Well, hopefully Ricciardo's right. Hopefully they did bring an update.
I think McLaren in the next. You know, they're clearly at the moment. I think they're going to overtake Red Bull soon.
Right? Ooh,
I say that because Red Bull doesn't have a senior driver anymore. And yeah. as soon as you take away a senior driver...
You don't think Max is too young to be senior?
He's not a senior driver. Have they performed really well since...
No, they've had a really lonely season.
Have they performed well since Vettel left?
No, I mean, yes, but they're not to win a championship. They're just floating in the same position. They're floating, yeah.
It's going to take a few more years for...
I think it's really hard to measure anybody against Mercedes these days.
Yeah, that's true.
Speaking of, just quickly, we've got Austria this week.
Yes.
Do you want to run us through some of your always accurate statistics, please?
Well, they're not my statistics, as I always say. They are the actual...
The universe's statistics that collate.
It is just what it is in the past, and we just reiterate what is that information. Okay. So if we look at the Red Bull ring, what is your track called? The A1 ring?
It used to be called... the A1 ring in Spielberg.
Yes.
But it's now called the Red Bull ring.
Now, not many races we've got on this data set. Only five past races we're measuring off. But winning from pole position has only occurred 40% of the time.
Okay, so a win from pole is 40% of the time.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So that is very interesting. That's actually two out of five races.
Considering that it's a very straightforward circuit.
Yeah, it's two out of five races. So... It may not be advantageous to win on to be on to get pole, but in saying that, then win from front row is 80%, which is very high. So it means possibly the way the track is designed, it might actually favour. You don't have to be on pole; you can be on second position. You might get a better run into the. We all know with this track that going into turn one is very sharp right hander, and then you've got a long straight to get to the next.
It's a power circuit.
It's a power circuit, and you can slipstream, and generally you can overtake in the first two corners if you're on the front row. It's a good battle.
Mm-hmm.
So the start of the race is going to be very exciting.
Okay.
It is a power circuit. It requires a lot of engine, oomph, we'll call it. So that's we are predicting. Now, this is Red Bull's home circuit. So I've got this feeling that if... the Honda engine's working well, they may be ahead of Ferrari at this track.
Okay, ahead of Ferrari.
I've got a feeling that we're...
So we're not talking about Mercedes anymore.
No.
They're out there.
Yeah, it's
they're
done.
They're going to win.
Done. Yeah. Their championship's locked in. The Constructors is locked in. It's either going to be Hamilton, and if something happens to him, it'll be Bottas.
Okay, so look at Mercedes win.
Yeah, so to finish in the second and third positions, I've got a feeling that Verstappen is going to be on the podium this weekend, or the Red Bull is going to perform really well.
Better than the Ferrari.
Well, this is the thing. The Ferrari, and Vettel reiterated this, can't say that word today, after the race, their car is not so good in slow corners. So there's two straights on this track. Obviously, the straight down the main straight, and then the second one after turn one. The rest of the track has got these windy turns.
Yeah, it's an old-fashioned track.
Yeah, and Ferrari just lose time in those kind of corners. Their car's not quick enough.
So, okay. So, Mercedes will win.
Yes.
Whoever it is.
Unless it's weather.
Yeah, whoever it is.
Yes.
And you're saying Max in third.
I've got it. Yeah, I'd expect Red Bull to be stronger there. They'll bring some tricks and things to this track, obviously trying to outperform.
I'm going to say, just to be different, Mercedes for the win, Mercedes for second, and I think that it'll be a Ferrari in third.
Maybe.
That's my prediction.
And where do you think your two boys will finish up?
Top 10 if the car can finish. I know it's really broad.
Do you think it'll perform well at this type of track?
I don't know how much faith I've got in the Renault power unit.
They brought a power unit. It looked like it worked well on the weekend. The Renault was up. The Renault's on the weekend, wrong. Who had a Renault engine? Norris finished ninth. Realistically, yeah, yeah. In my eyes,
yeah.
He finished further up. He just had an issue, right?
Yeah.
Ricardo.
Yeah, so Norris would have finished... I say fifth or seventh.
Yes, correct. So you've got literally Mercedes, Ferrari, one Red Bull, Ferrari, and then the two McLarens.
Yeah.
If we rearrange the results the way we think it should be. Then, so you've got the two McLarens, you've got the Alfa Romeo, then you've got the Renaults, mm-hmm. which is a Hülkenberg. So the four Renault engines...
We're in the top 10.
We're in the top 10. So they've done something. You've got the power now. You've got the power, and it's now down to the chassis and the setup.
Yeah, and Verstappen alluded to the fact that he's not happy that Renault seems to have a party mode and Honda doesn't. But anyway,
well, there you go. They've got a party mode, and I just think it's going to be good.
Well, let's have a look. I think McLaren will finish in the top 10, and we'll go from there. So I needed that podcast, Dave.
Yeah, thank you. I know this one was a bit down.
No. It was. Do you know what it was? It was
real.
It was real.
Keep it real, people.
It was real. From the guy cutting the saw outside,
to the disappointment of the race.
Harsh truth that Formula One is in a rut at the moment. So we'll try and make it as entertaining as possible. But until then, we'll see you next week. Small gap this week.
That's it. We'll be back shortly.
See you next Monday, guys.
Ciao.